Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
From Noble Robot on East Hennepin Avenue in Directed, Minneapolis, this is Nice Games Club, the show where Nice Game Devs talk gaming and game development.
I'm Ellen Burns Johnson, and I make nice games.
I'm Steve McGregor, and I make nice games.
And I'm Martha Croy, I too make nice games. For this week's episode, our topics are learning to use tools and co-op. And so, if everyone's ready, let's start. Well, listeners, if you couldn't tell, that little extra frivolity in the clubhouse today, for plenty of reasons, but one is that I don't know if the calendar math is exactly right, but when you're listening to this, listener, it will be 5 years since our first episode was published.
Ooh.
So it's our 5-year anniversary, I guess.
Yeah.
So we have nothing planned for this episode, but we are doing our yearly nicest episode coming up in a couple of weeks, and we'll also be sort of doubling up and doing that as our 5-year anniversary show.
Yes.
Which is pretty exciting.
Yeah.
Wow, 5.
That's a big number, but like, we've done a couple of anniversary shows. We've done a couple of like episode milestone shows, mm-hmm. and I feel like there's not much more to say about like, yeah, we're a long-running program now.
Yeah.
So I think marking the occasion is probably better than trying to come up with a whole production around it any longer. I mean, the thing is that, like, Ellen, this is your first year on the show, or you've passed your first year on the show, and you're getting to get hit 100 episodes pretty soon.
Wow.
And so I think maybe that might be a better milestone to mark.
Maybe, I don't know.
But have we been counting? I don't know.
Yeah, well, no, we wrote it down somewhere. And I just, the problem.
Where did we write it down?
That's the exact issue I was going to say. The only problem with, like, the only issue, when you write something down, if you don't remember where you wrote it down and you don't look at it regularly, then it's completely useless.
Yeah. Our other milestone coming up is 250 episodes. That's just 6 episodes away. So we'll hit that when we come back from hiatus this year.
Yeah.
In January or February. Mm-hmm. But again, just, we've done a number of these. It's, mm-hmm. it's pretty exciting. And it's really cool to see that listeners have been, they've been talking about the show.
Yeah. In a way,
like, it's, I'm making this awkward transition because today, right now, where we're recording, mm-hmm. Is the second day of the Wordplay Festival, right. Where our game Glom is part of the showcase there. And yesterday, during the first day of the showcase, it came up and we, you know, got some nice comments from people who are like, oh, yeah, I love that show.
I'm very glad there's stuff.
And I was like, okay, well, you know, I do forget sometimes because, you know, we do Nice Games Club. And then we also are game designers. And we also do, you know, our day jobs and like, you know, our gigs and various things.
Right.
And I tend to separate all that stuff out.
Yeah.
Partly because Glom is a production of the show as well as us as designers. But I do sometimes forget that, like, we are in some ways public figures.
Yeah.
But there are people out there who know who we are.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of just go into Nice Games Club mode when we do the show.
Yeah.
But when I'm out there in the world elsewhere, I don't think, I don't ever expect to be recognized or anything like that.
Well, remember when we went to that, the con we went to together as Nice Games Club, and, like, people recognized our voices? Oh, no, Martha was like that. I think Martha was, like, walking around saying things, and then
yeah.
And she's just like, I recognize your voice from Nice Games Club. Yeah. So
wild.
I know, right? It's probably not that unique. I bet a lot of people who have, like, you know, mid-tier shows like ours, you know, face that, where it's like, well, no one's going to stop us on the street. It's not, you know, there's we're nowhere close to, by orders of magnitude, that level of recognition. And so we would never consider that we'd ever be recognized by anybody anywhere.
Yeah.
Maybe we should test that. We should, like, go to a public space when it's safe to go up in a public space again, you know.
Just go to the library and talk and talk and talk.
Well, you'll definitely get some attention if you do that. But I was thinking just, like, just stand up and go like, wow, and just make sure we hit the pitch right, because I don't think I did there, and just see what recognition
happens. I'll just say my patented dang, and then people
will
dang.
Start clamoring.
Yeah.
Is that Stephen McGregor?
Oh my God.
Wow.
Someone just said dang, exactly like Stephen says dang.
Oh, goodness.
Anyway, we'll have more to say, or we won't, when we do our nicest this year.
Yes. Yeah.
We'll have more to say. I don't know if we'll have more to say about that.
Ellen will have more to say. Stephen and I have said enough. Before we get started, I want to talk about a couple of hardware delays that hit. From where you're sitting, listeners, it'd be a couple weeks ago when these were both announced. But Steam Deck, the handheld PC from Valve, that got delayed by 2 months. I think that's what they said.
Okay.
So people who were
That's not that bad.
No, it's not that bad. But, you know, I mean, it's like a new console release. So it's kind of a... Well, I mean, in a way it is. People who are expecting to get it at the end of this year, it's going to be February, and that's a bit of a bummer.
Yeah.
And then right on the heels of that, Playdate, the little yellow console that I'm working on, making a game for, that also got delayed. And that one is a sad story.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Basically, what happened is they had all, you know, they had the first run. They had the pre-orders went out like crazy, if people remember.
Yeah.
And so, but people were expecting to get theirs kind of almost on the same schedule as the Steam Deck at the end of this year.
Mm-hmm.
And then a next batch of pre-orders would come early, mid next year.
Yeah.
And the reason for that was just they made 50,000 of them, and then those got snapped up. And then they put in an order with all their part suppliers and factories and stuff for the next batch. And, you know, in this, this time, that's a hard to predict. So they just said 2022. And what happened is that first batch of orders, there was a huge battery failure with the supplier that supplied their batteries. They're like, none of them worked.
Oh.
And so what they had to do is they, one by one, they had to go and replace them with a new battery supplier that they were able to fix that first run. But that's going to take time to go through all of that. And they caught it before they shipped, which you can imagine for, like, you know, the gamble that they're taking. If consoles didn't hold the charge, that would have been ruinous.
Yeah.
It's very good news that they caught it. But it does mean the delay. So the people who were in that first batch of pre-orders won't get theirs until February.
Right.
Maybe March. I don't remember exactly on that, but we'll link in the show notes the story on that. It's really, really a big bummer. Mm-hmm. But the bigger part is that the next batch, all of their suppliers have, like, put them at the bottom of the list. Like the CPU that they got, this, like, really low powered ARM chip.
Yeah.
Apparently that particular one is just impossible to get now.
Oh.
And so they had to replace it with another chip that has similar capabilities, but is from a supplier. And it's just basically the way they tell it is that it's just a matter of, it's like, you know, when you're trying to find, like, I want to find that one thing in that one color.
Mm-hmm.
And then you, like, there's like 30 stores and there's no particular reason why one store has it and one doesn't. Like, you know, there are little reasons, but you'll never know.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's what Playdate or Panic is doing when they're getting some of their suppliers is like, oh, you don't have them? Well, I guess we'll just look at other places. And you don't go to, like, the next biggest. You just look at everywhere you can get these components without having to fundamentally change everything. What they're doing is they actually do have to redesign the main board.
Oh.
It just for the new components. Dang. And it's going to be the same device, but they just have to go through a lot of extra work to build it again with different parts.
Yeah.
For this next batch. The first batch, other than the batteries, are all ready to go. So just the saddest thing. And you can, you know, they have to put out these public messages and they have to convince people that, no, this isn't like a Kickstarter that got delayed forever. This is a different thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it reads very much like that.
Mm-hmm.
What they have to be open and transparent, but not, like, say things that would come off badly or it's a communications nightmare as well as a logistical one.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a little happy about it because I have a couple extra months to work on on my Playdate projects.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is good. They also announced the when they're going to be releasing the SDK for people finally.
Oh, good.
And their Pulp Playdate tool that will be in February, March as well.
Well, that'll give a lot of people more time to work on stuff too. Then.
Yeah, and I think that's gonna. I hope that because the simulator is really good that I've been working with, and that'll be the same tools that people have. People will be able to design and play their games and even share them in a way before anybody gets hardware.
Okay.
And so hopefully that will keep people's energies up, as they wait for it. Because it's not just a console. It's also a development device. It's also an ecosystem, and it's a hobbyist machine and all of that.
Yeah.
Hopefully there'll be enough of that energy that keeps through the long wait for that next batch that a lot of people are waiting for.
Yeah.
Rough stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. In good news, though.
I beat Metroid Dread.
Yay!
Pretty good. You got through it pretty quick.
I did. Yeah, I got to the part where I was like, well, I'm clearly going to get to the final boss here. And I was like, I'm just going to do the final boss.
Yeah.
There were a lot of items I could have gotten. I was like, nah.
Yeah.
So I just went ahead and beat the boss.
Yeah. How long did it take you again? Like 8 hours?
It was like 7 hours.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, that's really fast. My clear time was like 11 something.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's still not that long.
Compared to
AAA games. Yeah. Yeah, but it was good. I enjoyed it. I really liked the ending. I'm not really super deep in the Metroid lore, but there was some cool stuff that happened in the ending that I enjoyed.
Yeah.
It was a fun time.
Mm-hmm.
I would recommend it.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll do like when we complete it all together.
When we've all done, we'll do like a
the elephant in the clubhouse here is that Ellen.
I was so excited for it, and I haven't started it yet. However, I did have a huge deliverable that I was able to get done on Friday, so I should have more time going forward.
Yeah.
As long as it's not all cannibalized with finishing up the move.
Yeah. Right. To be fair, it wasn't your fault that you haven't played it yet. There was just a lot of stuff came up.
Like, it was my, as a contractor, I guess it's my fault because I accept the work, but like, you gotta work,
right.
I guess.
Yeah.
Nah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm just anxious for us to be able to say spoiler warning on the show.
Yeah.
And then we can just, the three of us, talk about it.
Yeah.
But now we have to, Stephen, I have to protect you from spoilers.
You have to say spoiler warning, and then I have to like walk out of the room.
Yeah.
Right.
Fingers and ears. La, la, la.
Yeah. I usually don't mind spoilers too much.
Yeah.
Because I don't know, but I actually don't want to hear anything about the ending.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing about a game like this is there's not actually a lot to spoil. And so any tiny spoiler is like 25% of the spoilers.
Yeah, exactly.
So you kind of just want to say nothing, even though it's not.
Yeah.
It's not that fundamentally spoilable.
Yeah.
But you just want to steer clear.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Exactly. We'll get there
soon, hopefully.
Yeah.
Although I think I'm going to probably take more time with it than you guys have. I can't imagine. Like, yeah, I think it's going to take me more than 7 hours, probably because I just don't have the reflexes that Steven does, and I'm going to die a lot. But. Also because I like getting all the puzzle secrets and things like that.
Yeah. I think I had like 80-something%. I don't even know what that is exactly, but they give you a percentage.
Well, there's 100%.
No.
And if you get
it's a percentage of. Like, is it of all the collectibles or is it like all the areas or the areas plus collectibles or
does it rate
you a percentage based on like on certain other, I don't know what the metric is.
I always thought it was collectibles.
I'm pretty sure it's
it probably is just that. Yeah. But I felt pretty thorough, so I suspect you will probably take about as long as I took, I guess.
Maybe. We'll see.
Yeah.
I was not thorough. I mean, after a certain point, you just don't need any more missiles.
That's true.
Need is not the word. That you
yeah. No, okay. I worked very hard to get 200 missiles. I was like 193, and I'm like, I can get 7 more.
200 missiles is a good number.
That's
a good number. That's pretty good.
No, like 300, though. No.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking back to like the Super Metroid days when I was playing that a lot, and I would just like get all of the super missiles and just I just liked the way that the screen shook when I fired them off.
Nice.
So good.
That's fun. Well, if you enjoy the game half as much as I can see you're enjoying yourself right now, I think you'll really like it.
Oh yeah, I'm so really excited for it. I was planning on I initially had a plan yesterday of going and grabbing the game and playing it,
mm-hmm.
and I fell asleep. I fell asleep again.
Yeah.
So I spent last of yesterday hibernating, and that's okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
We're adults. We get to sleep. That's the benefit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Being an adult, you don't get to sleep when you're a teenager.
Probably for most adults, it's not.
Yeah. Okay. Actually, that's fair.
But not having not having kids and having a dog that does love to take naps, then I'm good sometimes. I can take a good Saturday afternoon nap.
That's true.
And it's really good nap weather right now.
Yeah.
I know some people, like, I don't know.
Bad weather.
Yes. It snowed finally and it's gray.
No, Ellen, no. It did not snow. I don't believe you.
Don't look outside, Mark.
Mark.
Don't look outside, Mark.
My eyes are closed.
Okay, good.
Okay. How did you drive here? With your eyes closed.
I'm just ignorant to all around me.
Yeah.
Great.
He's really good at compartmentalizing. Ellen, you have a topic.
I do. I do. It has nothing to do with any of the things we've been talking about, as usual. So we've talked a little bit about like learning Godot over the last few weeks. We had like the Godot jam that that I went and did, and like, we've had one of our fans on who is a major participant in our Discord channel has been going even further than that and sharing some of his progress on the Discord channel, which has been pretty cool. Yeah. But I've also picked up a couple other tools just randomly this year, and I wanted to talk about just the process of learning tools because of a couple of reasons. I think it's nice to hear people talk about their process for learning things because learning happens in your own brain. So even if you're doing a learning activity with other people, it's still something that you are doing solo because you're building stuff in your own brain, and your brain's architecture is completely unique because it's dependent on your own experiences, right? And so to a certain extent, it's always going to be a solo activity. But I think hearing people talk about how they learn things can be encouraging, and it can be like a motivating, at least for me, it's motivating to hear other people talk about how their processes are, because then it makes me feel good that my process is different. Mm-hmm. And it's just kind of nice to get a little bit of moral support when you're trying to learn something. The other thing is our hiatus is coming up. And one of the things I want to do during hiatus, because the hiatus that we have will also kind of coincide with a little bit of a work lull for me, is I'm going to be spending more time. I'm going to get back to Godot and learn some of that a little bit more. And then also learn some other like e-learning development tools so that I have a little bit more variety in the work that I do for my day job. So I want to talk a little bit about that because I want to hear your stories and get jazzed up for that in those weeks that are coming up.
Hear our stories of learning things?
Of learning things. Yeah. So I want to talk a little bit about that, but I'll start and I can give you some of my stories and some of the things that I've been learning. So I mentioned Godot. I've also recently started learning Articulate Storyline. So if you're an e-learning developer, if you've ever done some of that before, you've probably heard of the tool. It's a really highly regarded piece of software in that it's like got a great learning community, practitioner community, dev community around it. So you can learn a lot of, there's a lot of resources on there on how to learn it. And it's also pretty fast for making interactivity that's like low level. Compared to what a game engine can do, it's not even close. It's not even really worth mentioning in the same conversation in terms of its capabilities, but it's another thing that I'm learning. And I also finally subscribed to the full Adobe Suite this year.
Ooh.
I've been able to get away with that because most of the work that I do is like designing and writing.
Mm-hmm.
So I have designed in Balsamiq and Adobe XD and things like that. I've also been using Miro, which is an online whiteboarding tool, and I've been using that to do wireframing. Works pretty well for that too. But for writing, I just use like Google Docs.
Yeah.
And it's fine. Because I work with a team of HTML5 developers to actually bring it to life.
Mm-hmm.
But I did a little bit of extra work this year in Storyline and with some Storyline developers. So I had some exposure to that tool as well. And so I'm going to learn that also over hiatus. So yeah, there's a lot of different things that I'm learning. And as I've been trying to pull in these different tools, I've kind of realized like I have the same process for a lot of these tools.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to just share that process out loud and then hear you guys talk about what your process you use for learning different tools. Before we jump into process though, I've shared a couple of tools that I picked up this year. What have you guys been learning this year, if anything?
Well, this is really recent, which is why it's top of mind, but mm-hmm. I used to write a lot of screenplays or things in screenplay format when I was working in commercial video and short films and stuff. And I used a tool called Keltex for that, which was a free screenwriting software that was pretty well regarded. And then I also used another Adobe app called Adobe Story, which was an online, it was actually a Flash app, that was available online and was also with the desktop version. And then as Adobe, this was like a decade ago now, as Adobe like started winding down its sort of Flash empire, but that they let that one just kind of linger, and eventually they shut it down in like 2014 or something. And by that time, I had started transitioning to my next career as a game developer.
Right.
And I didn't have a lot of need to write things in screenplay format. And so when I would write things that would be like for voiceover or for other types of things that would that I could use, I just didn't need to anymore. It just wasn't that important. Mm-hmm. It's just Google Docs or whatever. But recently, I found, just this week, I found the need to do that again. And I realized I don't know any of the current tools for screenwriting software. And a lot of them are, you know, $150 or something. And so,
I kind of said,
I'm going to download a couple of demos and see which one is going to fit the needs I have. And then maybe I'll pick one. Maybe I'll buy one if one is really, you know, meets my needs. But I also forgot entirely what I wanted out of a piece of software like that.
Right? Wow.
It's been a very long time. And I ended up not picking anything. I just have all these demos. And I ended up just like, well, you know what? I punted on the task. Because I had to get back to actually writing the thing.
Yeah.
I just went back to Word or whatever. But I found it like really kind of surprising because I get into a situation where I want to be autonomic.
Yeah.
And I just assumed I knew how. It's like, oh, I need to write something in screenplay format. I've done it a million times. I know exactly what I need to do. And a total blank.
Wow.
It was a very unusual alien feeling for me.
Yeah.
And that happened just this week. So I need to sort of like drill down and like start over with that kind of like thing, which is really weird. It's been a while for me.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting because I wonder if, you know, expectations have a huge impact on what your experience of learning a thing will be.
Yeah. My patience was very low because I'm like, I already know this.
Exactly.
Why am I, and I try to like systematically get, you know, the way I would when I need to learn new software.
Yeah.
But it just kept going, getting so frustrated because I just kept telling myself, I already have something for this, but I don't.
But you don't.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So you had to adjust your expectations, which is really difficult, especially since you've spent so much time in that space. It just hasn't been recent.
Yeah. Yeah. And that explains the next to no progress I made this week doing that.
Yeah. It seems like a very natural reaction. It's like, okay, this isn't working. I am not in the emotional state I need to be in to actually progress with this. It's going to go to the bottom of the backlog.
Yeah.
Yeah. Steven, how about you?
I was initially going to be like, I haven't learned anything, but that's not true.
False.
My company recently started trying to use Codex, which listeners who have been listening to us for a while knew that like we were sponsored by them for a little bit.
Yeah,
right?
They were the first ads we ever did were for
them.
Yeah. They're cool. Nice people.
Yeah, they are very nice. Mm-hmm.
Dang.
And I was, what's that?
I said dang.
Oh. Steven, is that you?
Yeah. Well, no. For listeners to know, it's sort of like Trello, but very specifically focused on game dev.
Yes. Yeah, I suppose. I feel like you could do it in various it doesn't have to be a game dev thing you use this like productivity tool for, but I've like gotten really accustomed to it. Actually, it's been pretty nice, but we're transitioning back into Trello now because I think everybody else on the team does not like it as much as I do.
Yeah.
I like it a lot because like you have your own hand, and so like I can just see my own tasks that I need to do, and like I only have to pay attention to those. If I need to pay attention to other people's tasks, I can just look at their own hands, but like otherwise I can just ignore their stuff.
That when we were looking into them when they were responding to the show those couple weeks, that was the thing that most impressed me about the concept is how good for teams it was.
Yeah.
Trello is good because it's so simple it's impossible to get wrong.
Yes.
But when you have a larger team, it starts to become not enough tool for
you.
Yeah.
And that's what Codex seems to be a good on-ramp without going full on Jira.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah, it's not Jira.
Once you're there, then all hope is lost. I felt it was filling a place in the market too. So, but it's good that bore out in your experience.
No, yeah, I enjoyed it quite a bit. It's just, you know, we're not using it anymore now. So, yeah,
not everybody could make that leap.
Yeah. And I think that's fair because I think like we had a whole system in place before and then I started working and then we transitioned into Codex after I didn't suggest it, but like they just did it on their own free will.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just started liking this thing, but like I'm using it for a different purpose, especially since I'm the only programmer. It makes a lot of sense for me to only focus on the tasks that I need.
Yeah.
So it made a lot of sense for me to do that. But I also understand why people are transitioning from Trello transitioning back to Trello or prefer to do that because they actually Trello added a new feature or something where you can add like add-ons or something for free if you have the free Trello service or something. And we've been taking dramatic advantage of that.
Yeah, that's the thing about Trello is that most people use the free version. And I'm actually not even that familiar with what the paid version gets you.
We don't have the paid version either. Well, so that's I don't know.
Most people don't.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's, I mean, it's a loss leader kind of idea.
Yeah.
I'm not, I might be discounting Trello's abilities because I don't consider whatever its paid features have, because I don't know anybody who uses it.
Yeah. I guess, right? I don't either.
That's an interesting one, because Trello, I mean, you can use it to organize your own stuff for sure.
Yeah.
Right.
But those kinds of tools are much more powerful when you're using them in a team, right?
Mm-hmm.
So to actually learn a tool like that, you have to kind of learn it with other people.
Right.
Right. There's process that's outside the tool itself
that
you share with other people.
Yeah, yeah. And you have to negotiate that with other folks.
Yeah.
It's not just learning. It's the whole, like, what is it? The forming, storming, norming, performing thing. Like when a team comes together. You guys haven't heard this before?
Yeah, you say that like that's something we would know. Right?
No.
Okay.
Say it slower and explain it also.
I can't remember the actual name of it, and that's probably bad that I can't remember the thing that it's actually called, but it's like the stages of team development.
Yeah.
Mm. And so first your team is forming, and it's, you know, you are doing your icebreakers, and you're learning about each other, and you're going out to that first awkward lunch, and
right. So
on and so forth. And then storming is you are all trying to attack the task, you know, and you're trying to get work done, but it's awkward because you haven't formed like the channels and the communication. You haven't negotiated the relationship yet. You're trying to do a thing, but you haven't figured out how to work together yet.
Right.
And then the third stage is norming, which is where you're starting to establish those norms, establish the culture of the team, establish the communication pathways, establish, like, you know, what decisions do you defer to Markin, and what decisions do you defer to Steven, and how do you communicate that, and so on and so forth, mm-hmm. and how often do you go to Jimmy John's for lunch, that kind of stuff. And then performing is the team has been together long enough and has practiced working together enough that you are kind of like able to optimize your performance and focus on that, and focus on like how do we get better as a team. Because you build up trust and so on and so forth.
Got it.
So whenever you're using a tool like Trello, it's a tool that is enabling that process, the forming, storming, norming, performing thing. But that process also informs how well you can use the tool.
Yeah.
Which is why I think Trello is so popular. Like if you're getting together in a game jam.
Yep.
You know, like when we did, was it Global Game Jam or was it Ludum Dare? It was when we were doing Hot Clock.
That was Ludum Dare.
Yeah. Okay. We used Trello.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Because it was really easy to, everyone already knew it and everyone already used it. So you were able to kind of like skip over some of the storming.
Yeah. Right.
And jump right to norming with that. Although we had to figure out some workflow and stuff like that. But like there was a lot less to figure out because it was a tool that everyone was already familiar with.
Right. Right.
So.
Yeah. And even if we didn't use it all in the same way frequently, we knew all the normal ways other people use it generally.
Yeah.
That we were able to align very quickly. Because we were familiar with the ways other people do it.
Exactly, exactly. And you know, if someone used colors to assign certain things and communicate something, and we typically don't, we still understand enough about the tool, and it's easy enough to understand and jump in and switch the way that you use it that you can figure it out. You know, it's like changing a different, like you use this drill, it's a Black & Decker drill versus like a, what's another brand of drill?
As you were in the middle of that sentence, I'm like, she's not going to be able to come up with another brand.
We have another brand of drill. We have a yellow one, and we have a Black & Decker orange one. And we always use a yellow one, and I don't remember what it is because I got the Black & Decker one as a gift, and Eric got the yellow one as a gift. So it's like my drill is the orange one. It's a Black & Decker, and his is the other one.
and the other one.
The other one.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
So let's say you have two drills, right? I'm trying to get you back on track.
Right. Thank you. You have two drills. And like, yeah, okay. One is orange and the other one's yellow. And one of them's got maybe like a light and the other one doesn't, but you can still quickly switch between the other, like the two, and figure it out because fundamentally it's the same kind of tool.
Mm-hmm.
So one team uses Trello one way and another team uses Trello a different way, but it's fine. You'll be able to adapt.
Right.
Now, if you're using something completely new, like is a team or by yourself, then there's a lot more that you have to figure out.
Yeah. Well, that relates a little bit to the trouble I was having because I didn't have any of those familiarities that I thought I did. I kept searching for it.
Mm-hmm.
So that can be difficult when you have to learn something new in a way that is different from what you know it to be,
mm-hmm.
which was just, that just was true for me no matter how I tried to do it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what happened to me in Godot, it sounds like.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
Because like you're so focused on how Unity does it. And Godot is such a response to how Unity does it
mm-hmm.
that it was a little bit harder for you because it it was trying to do the same things in a different way.
Yeah.
And it didn't make sense to you. Like, it didn't, not that you couldn't figure it out, but like, you were struggling with the decisions they made as to why to do things this way.
Yeah, yeah.
Which was just too distracting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly that. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interference. It's learning interference.
Yes.
You're learning something that is close to or relies on a lot of similar pathways in your brain.
Yeah.
To something that you already know really well. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you still need to forge new pathways, but it's like, you know, you're forging a new pathway, but it's really close to a pathway that's already well established. And so your brain, which likes to conserve energy, mm-hmm. is like, you need to just take this pathway that already exists. Why are you making me forge a new one that takes lots of energy and work? Take this other path. And you're like, but it's not the same, brain. You need to take this other one. The brain's like, no, no.
And what's funny is I'm not sure how well this relates, but I'm thinking about when I started doing more work in Unity, and it was such a struggle for me because I kept thinking like, I've used other tools that are better at this particular task, and it would frustrate me so much. Mm-hmm. And it would almost be like, I'm insulted that I have to do it in this way or whatever. And, you know, independent of all the other benefits that the Unity platform has. Mm-hmm. And I finally felt like I was getting really good at it, and I really knew what it was, and it wasn't distracting me so much for all the missing or different things. And then they introduced the nested prefabs
in the middle
of the widget satchel.
Yeah.
And at that moment, that suddenly, Unity turned into Flash, because that's how Flash structures its objects in space, mm-hmm. As nested components. And that metaphor was so familiar to me. And I didn't, it was so ingrained. And even though I hadn't done Flash in that way in a long time, I immediately went back to that and was so excited. And then in a way that is interesting, because like, I spent all that time learning a different way. And then the moment that my familiar way was offered to me, I took it back. Like, I immediately went back to it. Like,
yeah.
And immediately so what I mean to say is that even when you do all that work, like, you still have your history behind you.
Yeah.
That like, and you don't even know how powerful it is, and, you know, because you don't always get those opportunities that I did to like suddenly get my old workflow back.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Although it's one of the reasons why I just really love learning new tools, mm-hmm. Because there isn't any of that interference. I don't feel like it doesn't feel like work, like learning a new tool, even though it might feel a little scary. I mean, for me, when I'm trying to learn a tool that's completely new, it's like, oh, sweet, I get to learn a new tool. I'm going to install it. And I get really excited and I install it. And then I open it. I'm like, I'm going to click on some buttons. I'm going to start learning stuff. And I'm going to start messing around things. I'm going to make a circle. And then I'll open it. And I'll be like, I can't even make a circle. Oh, crap. Like, I don't know how to do this at all. And then I'll find some kind of formal learning product out there that'll kind of help teach me like step by step. Mm-hmm. And that's how it was with Godot. I just launched it, and my expectations were for myself are pretty low. I'm like, I don't know this. I know it's not going to be anything like Unity. I barely could make sense of Unity, even with Mark's help. When we were working on Widget Satchel, but I know I'll be able to figure it out. And plus there'll be some resources out there that will be able to take me through enough of it that I'll be able to figure it out. Turns out, that was exactly my experience. I was excited. I installed it. I opened it with Bravado. I'm like, yep, I don't know how to do this. That's exactly what I expected. I will go find some tools. And then the documentation for Godot that's just on their website has this great getting started section, mm-hmm. which I talked about, I think, when we were doing the jam or around that time. And it just takes you step by step through a project. And it was so great. It was just so amazing. It was so well documented, and it was just very well written and easy to follow. And that was really cool. I really appreciated that as a learner. Now, something that's interesting, something that I expect to experience maybe over the next couple months as I spend more time with Godot, is the difference between documentation that's really oriented towards learners who are new and documentation that's oriented towards learners who are more intermediate.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like the learning experience for someone who's new, like at least for me, I really, really need to be learning something by building a thing.
Yeah.
Right.
With a piece of software, right?
The same way, I think.
Yeah. I cannot stand when someone says like, well, here's this menu and here's this menu and here's this menu. I don't need a tour of the software. Teach me how to make a circle.
Yeah.
Like, I don't need a tour of the software. Give me some game files and teach me how to put them together. Mm. Because menus are not meaningful to me. I don't care about menus. I only care about the ability of those menus to give me what I need to build a thing. Give me something to build and then help me build it.
Yeah. I feel like approaching it from that perspective makes it, you have context as to why you need this thing instead mm-hmm. of just, like, you know you need to use the menus at some point, right? So it's not like it's not valuable to learn that information, but because you don't have the context as to why you need the menu in that moment, it's not something that you're really interested in.
Yeah.
You know, we've been talking a little bit about these topics, and we've circled them recently in a few episodes mm-hmm. the past month or so, and we've all felt pretty much on the same page, mm-hmm. like, all the way.
Yeah.
And Ellen, you've done a really good job of, like, putting our experiences into words. Like, but this is probably the first time where I feel I'm a little bit different from the two of you.
Oh,
interesting.
I do kind of like going through the menus one by one, because I want to interrogate what I might use this for.
And that's,
so basically.
Oh, so you want to find the context.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So we're still on the same page in a sense.
Sure.
But I do find that one of the best ways I like to learn something is as I'm doing the first thing I need to get done. Like, mm-hmm. if it's for a client and I need to get this done on a deadline, then I'm a little less prone to this. But still, it'll happen where I will be like, okay, this is a new thing. I'm going to just goof around and experiment a little bit. But it's important that I need to, in order for it to stick, I need to find what I could use this for and maybe try using it for something.
Got it.
Yeah.
Even if I then throw it away or I go back, or even if it's just in my mind palace, right? Not actually doing the work. You know, the same, like, if I go to a museum, I like to memorize the map before I go to the first gallery.
Oh,
interesting.
You know, because I'm desperate for knowledge, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way I do it is I try to get a high level as much. So when I am confronted with having to need that information, I'm like step one into it already.
Yeah. Okay.
You know what I mean? And I don't know how good I am at it, but I want to feel that. Because then it gives me the confidence of saying, like, oh, I'm going to need to use these advanced tools eventually. It's going to be a while.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to spend an hour figuring it out now before I really need it, so that when I get there, mm-hmm. I'll have the confidence to take step two.
Oh, that's fascinating.
Yeah.
That is, because that is totally different. And this is one of the reasons why I love talking about this kind of stuff, because you figure out that your brain works really differently than another person's. I'm totally not like that. I'm like, ooh, look at this museum map. That exhibit looks cool. Go. And then I'm like, well, that exhibit looks cool. Go there.
Yeah.
And then I figure out the map, you know, and how the structure of the building is put together
mm-hmm.
as I go through the cool stuff that I want to see.
Yeah.
And
that
is kind of how it feels like when I'm learning a new tool. It was like, I want to build this cool thing. So I'm going to use this tool and I'm going to do something with it. And then I just start making things with it. And if I need, you know, if I have a goal in mind and I can't figure out how to do it, I'll just type in Google how to do this in this tool. And usually it gives me a resource that will teach me how to use the tool for that one thing.
Yeah.
But that's, I don't know, there's something that's really engaging for me and kind of thrilling for me of just like not knowing everything about it and just going in.
Yeah.
And that's like an important feeling for me. I just have, like, I know I'm going to figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
So I just want to get started ASAP.
Huh.
So we should go to a museum together sometime and see how that works out.
He's like, all right, we'll just meet at lunch. It's for your way or mine.
We're looking at the map together and Mark's like, okay, so then there's this part and there's this part. And he looks up and Ellen's like, already.
you're already on gallery three.
Well, I don't like to rush through it. It's just like, I just start going.
No, that's how long it'll take me to analyze my plan.
Oh, I see. Got it. Got it. Okay.
Yeah. No, I do. So I also describe myself a little bit like reckless. Like, I like to just jump in.
Mm-hmm.
We each describe ourselves that way, but the process is very, very different.
Yeah,
right. Yeah.
Like, I definitely want to have a plan of attack. Like, I don't want to figure out everything, because that is ultimately a waste of time.
Yeah.
And you're not going to be able, you're not going to stick to that plan.
So, right.
But I like to have a kind of, like, a notion, anyway, mm-hmm. To give me that confidence.
Yeah.
And to know that I'm going to do efficiently. So, back to the museum metaphor, like, I will say, like, I'm going to go here, and here, so that I don't have to double back and waste my time.
Yeah.
I mean, probably because my knees are kind of bad, but like,
fair enough.
I want to optimize my walking speed. But it's the same when I'm walking through a parking lot. I'm like, shortest point between A and B. And I do that little like calculation before I get going.
Mm-hmm.
It's quick, but I have to do it.
Oh, yeah. That's super interesting.
That makes sense. I like the way, like, y'all, the way y'all are describing it, I just like get into the thing I want and then not having to learn anything else. So, like, I just go to the museum, I guess, in a museum situation. Yeah. I go for the
stick
one
to the metaphor.
Yeah, I just go to the one art piece, go, oh, this is nice, look at it, watch, look at it for a while,
go home.
A long time, and then I'm like, yep, I'm good.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah.
So, I mean, this gets me into problems sometimes because, like, I'll learn what I need to learn about a thing just so I can do whatever thing I needed to get done.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But, like, so oftentimes I'll be like, oh, I actually did this wrong, and I have to go back and learn more stuff, and I'm like, ugh.
And then you've established your working knowledge.
Yes.
And like I've done with other tools,
mm-hmm.
you frustrate yourself with having to change it.
Yeah, basically.
Right? Or add to it or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But like, I only learned the pure basics because I just want to get this thing done. I don't want to do all, I don't want to learn, like, I guess, like, generally speaking, when I learn a tool, I don't want to learn the tool so I can use the tool well. I just want to get whatever.
You're
thing
not worried
I need to
about
get
the third though. Thing you make in it.
Yeah, I just want to get the thing done.
Yeah, that's like a waste of time that you could be spending building that first thing.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah,
yeah, that's kind of what I'm at with it.
Yeah,
and I don't think it's a waste of time to learn these things because it's valuable and it will save you time down the line too.
Yeah.
Even with Unity things, like when I learn the stuff, I'm sure I'm going to use the stuff down the line. I'm still working in Unity.
But what use is retaining it if you don't need it right now?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so I'm just like, I'll just do the one thing I need to get done, and then I know how this thing works, and then I don't have to learn more stuff until later.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think it's a totally valid and wise learning strategy, right? Because if you learn something and it turns out that it is something that you're going to need to know often,
mm-hmm.
you're going to look it up a little bit more in the beginning than you are later, because you're just going to be practicing it. And then through mm-hmm. repetition, because it's the thing you're going to need to know a lot, it'll just stick. It'll just stick.
Mm-hmm.
Really, we're describing just all the same stages of gaining knowledge and proficiency, and just we do it in a different order.
Yeah,
yeah, we just approach it differently. Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, huh. Exactly.
Fascinating.
So, we talked about a lot of the things I wanted to talk about already, but I also want to talk about when do you learn? I have a hypothesis for Steven.
Eventually.
At the time of need. But like, do you schedule time to learn? Like, when, you know, what's your experience of like, oh, I wanted to learn this thing because I just wanted to learn it, or I wanted to learn this thing because I wanted to build something for Playdate, or I wanted to learn this thing because someone paid me to learn it? Like, what's your experience with those things?
Well, I have a pretty good idea of how to describe my process, which is that I have a goal in mind. And then if I hit a barrier on the goal, then I'll sidetrack to do that other thing, and then I'll work my way back to the main path on the way to the final goal.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So if I want to build this thing, Playdate's a pretty good example. So like in order to get familiar with the API, I was trying to think of like, well, I learned how it worked. And then I'm like, well, I don't know if I like the way this does it, and it doesn't provide this extra tool I need. So I guess I'll build that tool. Okay, build that tool. Well, if I build that tool and I build it that way, it's kind of just a little orphan piece of code. It would work better if it was part of a framework that expected that. And then I ended up building a game engine. So on the way to building the Widget Satchel 2, which is the goal ultimately, is to the game I want to make.
Yeah.
I wouldn't call that the right decision, but it's nor the wrong decision, but it's a good metaphor for how I do a lot of things, mm-hmm. which is on my way to the final goal, I will, if there's 10 steps, I'm going to slot in step 5A and 5B and 5C, and 7A, I'm going to do that as I go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's like planning in advance, but as I go, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
A little sort of a mix in that sense.
Yeah.
I will let myself get sidetracked, but I'm always focused on winding my way back to the final goal.
You're going to waypoints.
Yeah. And I'll never, and I'm always very careful that anytime I'm off on a tangent, that the vector of it does not continue to go far and further and further away.
Sure. Right.
It's got to turn its way back always.
Yeah.
And I have that in my head the whole time.
Right. You might go northwest for a while, but you're always heading in a northern direction.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Steven, how about you?
I just want to learn the thing. So I just...
You want to learn the thing so you can make
so
the
whenever
thing.
I need to do. So whenever I need to do a thing, I'm like, what do I need to learn to do this thing? And then I Google that and I figure that out and I'm like, I'm good.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's very much a problem that you have to solve and get behind you.
Yes. Well, right? Okay.
I do it my way because it's kind of exciting and fun for me. It's not fun for you.
No. But okay. So, but to be fair, when I learn this thing, then I'm like, oh, actually, now that I know I can do this thing, I can do more stuff with this thing. Mm-hmm. So then I gain a new goal, and then I do that thing instead and learn how to do that thing. So to be fair to me, it's not like I don't like learning. It's just like, I just like the sometimes the process of learning is frustrating for me, so I don't like just learn for the sake of it. But so the way I do it is I like getting things done. Mm-hmm. So I will get a thing done, and then because I got this thing done and I learned stuff about that thing, I will like go, oh, I can actually do more stuff with this thing, and then try to do a new thing with that, but I'm still directed towards doing that thing.
Yeah. So like I'm focused on maximum efficiency and you're focused on maximum productivity.
Yeah.
If you can learn one thing and get 10 things out of it, whereas I'm happy to learn, get one thing done per thing I learn.
Yeah. Yeah. That's pretty good. That's pretty accurate too, yeah.
So we've got maximum efficiency for Mark and maximum productivity for Steven and maximum woo for me. Maybe surprising no one.
Yeah. I mean, the journey is the destination for you, right?
Sort of, yeah. I mean, like, I really, what you're saying, Steven, about like, you want to build the thing, that really resonates with me. I really like building stuff. And oftentimes the thing that I will make, like, I made a shirt a couple months ago. I think I wore it here for
Folks, you should see this shirt. It's awesome.
Yeah.
I wasn't supposed to talk about how crappy it is.
I know, it was great. Well, you did say that there was a feature of it that was well hidden from us.
Yeah. I mean, like, okay, so I don't do a lot of sewing, but I like making things. So sometimes I have stuff for sewing at home and I like making things. And that's how I like learning things and I like learning how to make things. And so one day I was like, oh, I'm going to make it a shirt. And
you said it just like that.
I did. I got together with my sister and my grandma. My grandma has a lot of experience sewing, but she's in her 90s now, so she doesn't really do that anymore, but you know, it's nice to have company. And my sister is very accomplished. She has done lots of her own cosplays. She has a really sick Jedi costume that she made herself. Really cool stuff. And so we decided we were going to get together at my grandma's house and do a sewing day. And we were leading up to it, and my sister kept asking me, so what do you think you're going to make for sewing day? And I'm like, maybe dog bed. And then the next day I had to say, well, maybe some pants. And the next day she'd ask me, and I'd be like, well, maybe a skirt. And then I finally settled on this shirt. And I'm like, I'm going to make a shirt. And here I was thinking, I'm going to make this shirt in like an afternoon.
Yeah.
No, by the end of the afternoon, I had cut out the fabric for the shirt.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So then the next day, I'm like, I'm going to finish this shirt. And I finished the shirt and I was really excited about doing it. And it does look pretty nice from the outside. But if you flip it inside out, it's very messy and things don't quite line up. So I did learn how to make the shirt. I'm very happy that I made the shirt and I do wear the shirt and I feel great when I wear it because I made that shirt. On the other hand, it's not a great example of quality. Mm-hmm. But for me, it's not about the quality. It's about the woo. I made this shirt, you know?
Yeah.
So where was I going with this? Woo. We started with woo.
Maximum woo.
Yeah, okay. So I do like making a thing. Mm-hmm. I like the feeling of having made the thing.
Yeah.
I like the process of making the thing.
Sure.
And I think that's what I mean by maximum woo, like the maximum enjoyment of the process from start to finish in the service of making something.
That makes sense.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, and that sounds different from me in that, like, I just like having the thing done. I don't necessarily, well, sometimes I take pride in, you know, doing a thing by myself, but most of the time I'm like, this is better now, yay. And not like, I did this thing, yay.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I
get that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you wouldn't be like, look at this terrible shirt I made. Isn't it great?
I mean, I've knitted before.
That's cool.
I used to have a hat. It was a scarf that I knitted.
Mm-hmm.
I never finished the scarf. Huh? Dang. Should knit again.
Wait, were you walking around with like a half knit scarf?
No, I just had a scarf I just never finished in my at my place.
Oh, so, okay.
Yeah, I didn't. I wasn't walking around with it. I'm so proud of this not finished product.
It's knit pretty well on one side, and it's just like it's just stringing some needles.
Yeah. I want that's my new Halloween costume.
It's an aspiring
knitter. Oh, that's funny. Oh,
that's pretty cool. Yeah. So it sounds like Steven, you don't schedule time for learning because you're working.
And
fit it into your workflow.
No, I'll be like, well, I mean, sometimes I'm like, oh, I want to mod Skyrim, so I'm gonna I will schedule time to learn all the new things that, because Skyrim just came out with a new update, doggone it. So now I got to learn all this new stuff. And I'm not going to do that. I'm going to wait a year or two.
There's just like a 10 years of Skyrim, like news beats that just happened. And I'm like, great, finally, everyone could be set free. But no, it's just,
it's just boring.
It's just boring.
Digging back into it.
Eventually. But no, I need to make sure I have time to do the thing, but I don't like schedule time to do it. I'll sometimes just get inspiration and be like, I can improve this thing. And then I'll just like start doing it. And if it takes too much time, I get bored or something, I'll stop.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I do it.
Yeah, kind of like a scarf.
Yeah. I don't schedule time, but I budget it. Mm-hmm. So like I try to guess, like I'm going to be distracted by a couple of things. Cause I'm surely sure that step four is I'm not going to be able to manage without learning something. Don't know what I'm going to have to learn, but I'm sure it'll take me a while. So I try to budget, and it's not always accurate, but I don't schedule it. I guess because I like to leave it sort of open-ended a little bit, because I don't want to like cut it off early, because then I've wasted some time, you know?
Yeah. Oh, that's really interesting. Because I like scheduling time to learn.
Yeah.
Okay. Because when I'm learning something, I'm doing it for me.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. There's no external demands on it.
Usually not. Not. When I'm learning something, I'm doing it for me. And then when I actually am able to perform with it, then I will start committing to helping other people with things.
Sure.
Right.
So
right.
I'm
motivated by those demands.
Yeah.
So I just, that actually, that inspires me to make new things, is to give myself reasons to learn stuff.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, I can't just sit down and say, like, I'm going to learn something new. Like, well, what do I want to learn? And like, this will be interesting to learn. Like, I can't work that way.
Yeah.
Same.
Oh, that's so interesting, because that's exactly how I love children. It's like, okay, you are now going to set aside these 6 hours and you're just going to learn this thing.
Yeah.
And that to me is like, you give me the option between 6 hours where I could just learn my own stuff and 6 hours on a beach in like Belize, I will choose the former. That's just like such an amazing reward.
Yeah.
To me, it's just having just that free brain space to just like dig into something new. Oh, yeah, getting so excited. So I'm hoping to give myself a lot of those days in December, kind of over hiatus. And as it's going to be like my Christmas present to myself. It's just time.
Hey, you.
Me?
Me?
No. You. Me?
You?
No.
Ellen?
Me.
No.
Me.
It's Ellen.
No. Oh. Listener. Fill out the feedback form, dang it.
Yeah, Ellen, why would Ellen fill out the
feedback form? Actually, Ellen, you should fill out the feedback form, too, if you have opinions on that.
I'm biased, but I will if you insist.
Okay, but...
What's the URL?
nicegames.club/feedback.
Let's see what's there. I'm going to type it in.
Yeah, go look at it. Oh, yeah. It's very important for us to get that feedback.
You vamp while I type it in.
We can learn about we can learn about what's wrong about the show and improve on it.
Steven, what are the kind of things we want feedback on?
Well, one thing is like, how do you as a listener engage with us? Where do you do it at? Do you do it on Discord? Do you do it on Twitter? Do you do it on Twitch? That would be weird because we don't have a Twitch, but do you want to do it on Twitch?
Yeah.
Patreon, etc. We have a lot of avenues, but like, let us know if another avenue works better for you or something, because like we can provide that.
Yeah. So it's not just feedback about the show, which of course we want. Mm-hmm. It's feedback about your relationship with the show.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yes. So fill it out. Dang it.
It's I loaded it.
Don't yell at Ellen.
Or listener. Don't yell at.
You're right.
You can yell at the listeners.
All right. If you don't like it,
what are they going to do?
Fill out the feedback form.
They can give the feedback form.
Right, exactly.
don't tell them it's at nicegames.club/feedback.
It is. And even more, I will tell you that it loaded so well on my mobile phone.
Oh, did it?
Yeah. There's a picture of Mark, and there's a picture of Steven, and there's a picture of me. And it says Nice Games Club Feedback. So you know that you've reached the right location.
There you go.
And then the form starts with, hey, this form will take about 5 minutes to do.
Right.
And
It's short.
And then there's some questions asking about the stuff that Steven just talked about. And in total, I can get to the bottom of the page with like 2 flicks of my thumb.
Right. So it's good for people who have a lot of things going on in their day. They can they can still fit this in.
Yeah, for sure.
Yes.
For sure. And like I said, it's easy to get to, and it's formatted for mobile. So you can do it while you're waiting in line at the DMV.
Right.
Or while you're on the bus. Or while you're on the train.
Yeah.
Or while you're, you know, being pulled by the buggy.
Or literally right now, if you're not driving.
Yes.
Please don't do it while you're driving.
Yeah, don't do that. But fill out the feedborn, dang it.
The what?
What did I say?
Feedborn.
Feedborn! No, feedback porn. Just. Okay, I'm done.
That's nicegames.club/feedback.
Okay, my topic.
Yeah.
Is co-op. Mm-hmm. What is co-op? It's cooperative.
Right.
It's when two or more people do a thing together.
Like a podcast?
Like a podcast.
You describe it as if it's a somewhat alien concept to you.
It's not. I don't know. This is how I wanted to introduce it, I guess.
I am told people sometimes cooperate.
Uh-huh. I'm looking at the first bullet point in this topic, which is that your brother and you played a co-op game.
Yes. What? We do that from time to time.
Recently?
The two of you worked towards the same goal?
What hospital is he at? Just kidding.
Me and my brother played It Takes Two.
Yeah.
Which, you know, is a very cooperative game.
Yeah.
Actually, me and my brother played the game that they made before that called A Way Out, and I'm not going to talk about that game because the ending is aggravating.
Right.
I don't know if y'all have played it, but.
And that's from a studio that's very focused on two-player only co-op experiences.
No. The first game that they made was called A Brother is a Tale of Two Sons, and that was a single-player game that was effectively co-op with yourself.
Oh, because you played two characters on one controller.
Yes,
right?
Exactly.
That's such a strange thing.
I know, right?
But their next two were...
The next two were all co-op, yes. Mm. They focus on that. And so I wanted to talk about co-op because, I don't know, it was on my mind recently. Mm-hmm. And I want to talk about this also in respect to what I think is different called... what I'm going to call a collaborative game. Mm. I think a cooperative game is a game where people are working together, but a collaborative game is where people are working together, but one person, everybody has all the information that the other people have so that they can, one person can just tell other people what to do. Mm. And then, so they'll be carrying out actions that somebody else is telling them to do. And it's not exactly the same thing. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So for instance, if you're playing a cooperative board game and everybody can see all of the stuff on the board, somebody can just tell you, hey, move your piece over here or do this ability.
Yeah.
And then
essentially, it's a game where the entire team can take one action.
Yes.
Even if mechanically people take their own actions.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
Whereas a co-op game, at least in your description, is where people are, they have their own agency and autonomy.
Yes.
But they're working towards a similar goal.
Yes, exactly. Thank you. Yes. I think I describe collaborative as a teacher and student. A teacher is teaching. They have the same, this teacher and student have the same goal of, I guess, the student learning, I think. But the teacher is directing the student on how to learn. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily the teacher and student working together to learn the thing. I guess they could, but it's not,
yeah,
it's not necessarily the case.
They're both working towards the same task. And they, this is tough to think about, but yeah. I feel like I know.
I like
what you're
the way Mark described it. I'm making it worse.
Okay, so all right. Just replay that part.
Yeah. So I want to talk about what makes a co-op thing, what makes a co-op game compelling, what makes a co-op game not compelling, mm-hmm. things to avoid, things to want to add in your game, things like that. I found that because I've worked on a couple of co-op things, and I've had some co-op ideas in my head. It's been a while since I talked about it, but I had this idea called The Mage and the Knight. Where one player plays as a mage, one player plays as a knight, and you have different, it would be an action co-op combat sort of thing, but you have different roles in combat.
Right. Sort of, it's a gauntlet type game, but a much wider gulf between player tasks.
Yes. Yeah. 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 And so one thing I've been thinking about this a little bit, one thing I think that helps with cooperative games is having each player have hidden information. They have their own knowledge base that they can work with. That other players do not have, or they're not allowed to have.
Right.
So
there's some co-op board games that are like this, where you are instructed by the rules to keep secrets.
Yes.
Even though you have a shared goal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We were working on Robosta, and that game is somewhat cooperative and also competitive, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we actually didn't want hidden information by fiat of rules.
Yeah.
And that's why we introduced a competitive component so that players could have a reason to keep secrets.
Yeah, but you're right. But I think we do have hidden information in that each person has their own role that they don't want to tell other people, or at least they're incentivized not to tell other people.
Right. They're motivated by their own individual goal. Whereas you're talking about co-op things where some other thing is keeping that information.
Yeah.
Secret.
And oftentimes it's just the game tells you don't do it.
Or in a fast paced game, it's not really efficient for everyone to share their hand.
Right.
You got to play right now.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point. Another thing that can make co-op compelling is like having each player have different abilities or roles. I think it's important though to make sure that like when you're doing this, everybody has their own abilities or roles, that the roles still can't be easily dictated by one player or another player.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise then you get collaborative, and I'm trying to avoid that.
Yeah.
I don't like that personally in games.
Do you think that's like an exclusive requirement? Because maybe you're focusing on that now, that asymmetry between players, but there is something also like a two-player beat 'em up where there's just too many enemies for one player.
Yeah.
And so you give two players the same abilities and they have to coordinate their tasks. Or they could just individually fight half the enemies.
Yeah.
But they have the same mechanics and skills.
Yeah, that's possible too. Yeah. I mean,
that just doesn't interest you as much.
Well, no, but I mean it doesn't interest me as much. But I think that is an aspect of cooperation that, you know, is a good point, and I hadn't considered. Like, just the task is too big for one player to do,
right?
So having two players is necessary. I think that's good. Me and my brother also played, what was it, there was like a shooter, Army of Two, that's what it was called.
Mm-hmm.
Where like, I mean, you both of you were shooters, you just shot, I think you're mercenaries or something, I don't quite remember the whole game.
But there was shooting.
it was cooperative shooter, and we had the same abilities, but there's just a lot of enemies, I think. We had to, you know, we had to work together to defeat them.
What I like about games like that, mm-hmm. the potential for games like that, is that then there can be differentiation between players based on what they themselves bring to it.
That's true.
So I like games like that when, if your options are pretty wide.
Mm-hmm.
So you can choose to do this versus choose to do that. Like, somebody can hang back and throw grenades, and the other person could go up front with the knife. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But they both have grenades and knives.
Yeah.
Right? They just can decide. They can kind of break it out. And that requires, now there's risk to that, right?
Because
you can have somebody who's just really good at everything.
I was going to say, yeah.
Right, so you have to design in such a way where that's either impossible or not fun.
Yeah, we've all done student projects where, you know, some people aren't picking slack.
I think the best example I could think of something like that is when we were playing Star Trek Adventures,
mm-hmm.
the role-playing game.
Yeah.
And I was the GM, and I would task, okay, there's this thing, you've got to get to this force field or something, some problem.
Yeah.
But it has many components. And now everyone has their own skills and unique abilities, but everyone's got a tricorder.
Right.
And so there are some times, I really, really liked when everyone just, because everyone has to independently come up with their own way of helping.
Mm-hmm.
And it isn't always related to what their character sheet says.
Yeah.
And I always get I always got a thrill out of that when I saw people work together that way.
Yeah. 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 That stuff's cool. I like that stuff. Another thing that I came up with in this list is players just being in different locations that like can affect other players.
Oh yeah.
So like
for
instance, like you're both on a corridor and it's like separated by a wall. There's a switch that will open this door so the other player can walk through it. That's a very simple example of like this kind of co-op thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. For some reason the only thing I could think of is there's a Mario Party mini game that's exactly this.
Yeah. And that's
not
just like two people attacking the same problem with different tools.
Mm-hmm.
That's two people playing two different games, essentially.
Yeah, they're playing in different locations. You can still have the same like actions mechanics.
Oh, okay.
But like, I think like, well, but also maybe potentially having different mechanics. This, I guess, beyond the scope of that bullet point.
Right, that could be throughout the whole game or just contextual based on the moment of cooperation or whatever.
Yes. And I think another way to help with the co-op is just having accessible gameplay. Because like, I think, because everybody comes into a game with different skill levels and skill sets. So like, I guess unless the game is specifically directly focused on this specific skill, which is possible, I suppose.
Yeah.
It's helpful to have it be accessible because then more people can play it.
Right. You want to be able to, there's a genre you love and has a co-op mode and you want to introduce it to somebody who's not as proficient in that genre.
Mm-hmm.
That's a little harder if the game isn't accessible in that sense. Like,
yes.
right?
Yeah. And when I feel like as developers, we need to come up with better terms for accessible, because like there's different kinds of accessible.
Right. You mean accessible in just the general sense.
Yes.
Yeah. It's easy to
approachable?
Access.
Easy. Approachable.
There you go.
Thank you, Alan. Approachable. Yes. Approachable gameplay.
Well, Alan, you've talked about how you and your husband have wildly different tastes in game genres.
Right.
Yeah.
How are you able to play a lot of co-op games together?
He's probably also in the hospital with Charles. No, it's weird because it's really hit or miss. I think the degree of success that we're able to play co-op games together is entirely dependent on how tired I am that day.
Okay.
Because if I'm really tired, then I just don't have... I think I just need more patience to work through our different play styles, because he is... Like, when we're playing a co-op game that's more in his wheelhouse, then it's really hard for me to keep up.
Yeah.
And so we end up falling back into that mode that you were talking about. And I'm not quite grasping the terminology of the taxonomy that you set up here, Stephen.
Okay.
I'm probably going to use it wrong, but like, if you're talking about collaborative being more like someone is directing the other person.
Yeah.
When we're playing a game that's more in Eric's wheelhouse, that is how we end up. He's telling me how to do it and I'm executing. And sometimes that can be a lot of fun. Like when we just crush Overcooked. Like,
sure.
That game, we just completely dominate. And,
that's a good example of collaborative. Well, it's also cooperative too. It's not just...
Well, very quickly, you appoint somebody team captain.
Yeah, somebody has to...
That is not a mechanic in the game, but it's every team has to do.
Yeah. Yep, because there's just too many things.
There's too many things, exactly. Mm-hmm. So everyone has the same abilities in the game as a character.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But like, it always ends up being Eric as our team captain when it's just the two of us playing, because he's actually worked in restaurants before, so he has an idea of like and B, and this is probably more of a factor.
It's troubling that experience maps so well to Overcooked.
I think it does a little bit, but more so the more important factor is he's just got a really good brain for efficiency in setting up systems to be maximally productive or maximally efficient, and I don't right, we already talked about this, my paradigm is maximum woo. It's not maximum efficiency or maximum productivity, it's maximum woo. But I really like beating games too, so like I really like it when we can get 3 stars on the levels, so I like in that kind of game it's really we just fall into that rhythm, and he's like, okay, I think we need to set up the system this way, and then we execute the system that way, and I'm like, woo! We got 3 stars! Woo!
Yeah.
So it works out really well.
Mm-hmm.
We don't play that game very often, because to him it just feels like work.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Right, you get to have all the fun.
Yeah, that's not what we want.
That's fine.
So we don't play that game very often, because to him it just feels like work, and that's fair. Mm-hmm. Whereas, like, a lot of the co-op roguelikes that he really likes to play, like Streets of Rogue, Enter the Gungeon is another one. I just like, he's so good at it that I just end up ruining things so much. Like, hey, let's go in this door. And he's like, no, I can already tell that door is going to be useless. I'm like, but I want to go in the door. He's like, there's nothing in there. I'm like, I'm going through the door. So we do like cooperative games. It's just a matter of finding the right game. I think cooperative puzzle games are really the thing where it's at. But I say that as someone who really loves puzzle games, and he usually doesn't choose to play those on his own.
Well, I think what can be useful is games that allow people to slot into their own strengths.
Yes.
So like Overcooked is a good example where sometimes the team captain should be the person who's actually worst at the game.
Yeah.
Because then they don't have to do as much, and they don't have to be as... you don't have to be on the ball chopping onions or whatever, but they just can watch the screen and deliver, you know, because being good at the game, with the controller is not the same as being able to
exactly
understand what needs to be done.
And right,
so sometimes that's a really good role for someone who's having trouble with the play of that game.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of what you want, is you want, you know, some people who can like, who can be the captain, who could assess the general, and then someone who could be the soldier, you know? And if you can find a game that can work with that, but there's almost no way to design for that, right? Because there's going to be, you can't design for these two types of players necessarily. It's just a fun thing. It's just a good thing when it happens.
Or can you?
Well,
that becomes extremely exclusionary, because it becomes the combination of those two types. I mean, that's obviously a reductive way to do it.
Okay.
If you were really to target that type of thing, it's not just like you need two players. You need one player like this and one player like that, and that's a much taller ask.
Sure.
But when you live in, you know, with someone who is another type, if the two of you can find a game that works for you that way, then, you know,
then it works out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. To kind of interrogate the taxonomy a little bit more, I wanted to ask you how you would categorize and two games are examples that I wanted to bring up.
Okay.
One was Keep Talking and Nobody Explodes. Mm-hmm.
That's a good question. That's cooperative.
You know, but that one also, because of the way the rules are, that you have somebody with the bomb, who can see and everybody else. I know that when we play that as a group, with my family or with groups of friends, mm-hmm. Dale, my wife, she becomes the team captain.
Yeah.
And so she'll assign, all right, you're on this duty, you're on that duty, because she knows who's good at what.
Yeah.
And she knows what order to do things in, and like the person looking at the bomb says, there's this, this, and this, and she knows which one to tackle first. Mm-hmm. And she very naturally slots into that role. But she also takes a couple of the tasks for herself. So it's a little bit of a mix between those things where she gets to play the game more than anybody else. So that's kind of maybe not ideal. Mm-hmm. But also everyone does have their own roles because it's the only way that game works.
Right.
Yeah.
Someone can't
it's
domineer
just too many
and
tasks.
Do everything. Yeah.
Yeah. So it makes sense.
Well, that's something to consider then if you're looking to have that kind of dynamic. Mm-hmm. You've got to have a lot of tasks. And we touched on that earlier, and there's just too many enemies to fight. You have to have a buddy.
Yeah.
I think for a game that is there's a risk of somebody stepping up and wanting to do everything. As a designer, you want to make sure that you punish that behavior.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You make that not fun for that person.
Yeah.
So that they can naturally find their way to a healthier relationship with their co-players.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 So I think I'd say that's cooperative.
Yeah. Okay. Actually, I come up with a third one. But we'll get to that one in a second.
Okay.
The second one I wanted to bring out was Dicer and Clasp. The one that we made for that game jam, right? Because they were two entirely different roles.
Yeah.
And a lot of that was based on hidden information, right? Yeah. You had one person who was in the maze, in mm-hmm. the dungeon, and then you had one person who was navigating the map. And the information there was no in-game information that was passed back and forth between the two pieces. It all had to be communicated verbally.
Yeah, there's one person who wasn't looking at the screen, right? Or
well, they were looking at the other screen with the map on it, but yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they weren't looking at the same screen. Now, people just decided that once they got stuck, like then they would come back and they would like piece it together together so that you'd uh-huh. see people with one person, like two people on the same side of the desk that we set up, and then the one person who was looking at the map would go back and look at the map and then come back, and then so people figured out, the intention was that one person was looking at the map and the other person was looking at the screen, but people played it however they wanted to have fun.
Yeah, right.
That's ultimately what
you
want.
That's a good question. I think that's more collaborative.
Okay.
Because one person's directing the other person where to go. The other person's just doing the actions.
You know, it sort of depends because like that was a game jam game. Yeah. But if it were built out, then you'd have the person who was receiving instructions might have more mechanics to engage with where they are fully responsible.
Yeah.
Like when they approach an enemy, then they have to actually beat that enemy. And the person who given them instructions can't help them with that.
Yeah.
You know, so that might be something where that game would grow into something that's more
yep.
purely co-op.
Yeah. 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 Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think that's collaborative because I think it's just someone's directing someone to do a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. It's a pretty common escape room mechanic.
Yes.
Is somebody has to be the instrument of somebody else's puzzle solving.
Yeah. You know, that's interesting because like, with respect to like board games and stuff, I don't like it when people are just telling me how to play because then it doesn't feel like I'm playing the game.
Yeah.
Right.
But like in an escape room, I'm okay with that because ultimately, I guess we're all trying to solve the puzzle.
Right.
So it's not quite the same.
There's a time crunch and there's a
and there's a time crunch.
If I'm the person who's like, okay, there's a square and a circle and a chain and a little button. Okay, what do I do? And I'm not going to have any part of figuring this out.
Yeah.
But I'm the person moving the things around and mm-hmm. there's a time. That's still gameplay.
Yeah.
Even if it doesn't engage the part of my mind that maybe I prefer to do when I play games,
yeah,
I could still feel kind of excited about that. Mm. In a board game, there's less play happening for that person.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. You had a third idea, Ellen.
Yeah, Warframe.
Warframe?
Yeah. Well,
I only played that a little bit.
Yeah, I've only played it a little bit too, so I'll do my best to try to describe it. But like,
okay.
There's a lot of different modes of play in Warframe, but one of the things that you do, at least when I was playing, well, the main thing that I was doing is I was just grinding out these little mini levels, right? So these little like missions you'd go on, they're procedurally generated, the missions are, the locations are, and you'd go in there with yourself or yourself and your buddy or just a bunch of randos, and you'd complete your missions. You'd unlock the thing, or you'd collect the doodad, or you'd just fight off the wave of whatever's.
Yeah.
And if you just went in there with a bunch of randos, like, you're supposed to contribute, but it's perfectly like they can complete the mission on their own. Mm-hmm. So then I would experience that, like, when I was first learning the game and we had to go like unlock certain things at different parts of the map, and the map is procedurally generated, so it's a different map every time, right? Yeah. But like, I couldn't read the map yet and I wasn't quite used to moving around, so I would be really slow compared to the other players of Warframe. You can move your character real fast.
Yeah,
in that
you
game.
Can. Yeah.
Yeah. And I hadn't figured out the key bindings and all the moveset yet. So like, I would start the level and I'd be like, yay, we're doing a mission. And then I'd get a notification like 30 seconds later that the first thing was done. And then 30 seconds after that, they did the second thing and then the level's over. And I was like, well, I got credit for that, I guess. I got like one extra bonus pickup item and I get credit for the mission, but I didn't really do anything.
Yeah.
So how would that sort of thing?
I don't know that that's even collaborative. It sounds like y'all are just doing this. You just happen to be in the same place at the same time.
Well, yeah. I mean, like, I guess that's right. I wasn't contributing.
Yeah. I mean, that's true for a lot of like MMOs, mm-hmm. And at their worst, right?
Yeah.
Like raids, you can bring 50 of your friends and like not everyone has to do anything.
Yeah, yeah, fair enough. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Right, because those systems have to be extremely flexible, mm-hmm. and therefore they can't be that specific.
Yeah.
I remember when I played a long time ago, I used to play MapleStory, and there was a raid that we did, and like I had done the raid enough times that like I knew the, or I don't even know if, I don't think it was a raid, I think it was just like a party quest, in that like there wasn't really a lot of fighting you had to do, there were like some puzzles and stuff you get to go through, mm-hmm. and I'd done it enough so I knew the puzzles, so I would just like do the puzzles. And then people would just wait for me to do the puzzles because I did it so many times. So I would argue that it's neither of those things. It's just a game that people are playing at the same time.
Right, right. But that brings up like a sort of an interesting point about like, mm-hmm. a lot of times as designers, we tend to think about what our goal of a design is. And then also like, oh, but this, it doesn't quite get that. It's a bit of a failure, so it's not quite there. But thinking about those kinds of systems, that flexibility and that it can work like that, where that those are approachable because mm-hmm. somebody can be on a team and not have to do anything. Mm-hmm. And that's not, it doesn't, as a game designer, that feels kind of like, well, that's not quite right.
Yeah.
But like, maybe sometimes you don't have to be all the way. There's other benefits to having an imperfect system or a more flexible system.
Yeah. Well, I feel like it's important for people to feel included in the game, whatever you're doing. So like, if they're not doing a thing and I feel like they wouldn't feel included, at least in that particular section of whatever you're doing.
Well, I guess what I mean is that there's different approaches, right? So
sure.
And different players and
yeah.
And engineering your system to guarantee that everyone participates means that it's a much more demanding game of everyone.
Yeah. Okay. That's
right. True. They have to engage with it more. MMO is just the example that I've been thinking about, but like that's a case where maybe that kind of thinking probably happens a lot, but then they probably pull back on it a bit they're designing, because mm-hmm. when they test it, like some people are just, they play these things so casually and autonomically that like they don't want to be fully engaged.
Exactly. I was gonna say MMO is probably the space where you wouldn't want to have to do all that kind of stuff, so that I think makes sense.
But that, I mean, that's also true for things like puzzle rooms. Sometimes you just get dragged along and you just want to enjoy yourself, and so you don't, if this puzzle room is designed for six people, like it, that probably means four people can do it.
Yeah.
Right. And so that there's that flexibility to allow for different levels of engagement, as well as different play styles.
Yeah. That's true. That's true.
I would love to do a puzzle room by myself, but I need like 4 hours. I have to pull off every book on the shelf.
I would
like,
love
what's
to.
What's in here? What's
I would
in
love
here?
To come with you and just watch you do that.
That could be, maybe it's a Patreon episode.
Well, the three of us will go to a puzzle room and just Ellen will do it.
Okay, cool. Okay. We'll just comment, I guess. So that'll be fun.
We can't say anything that could possibly help her.
Right.
It's going to be like Mystery Science Theater. But just me doing a puzzle room.
Yeah.
And then eventually you guys will leave because it'll take so long.
Yeah.
Like, is she, we're still working on the puzzle, or did she just get distracted by that weird thing in the corner?
Now, we took the labyrinth to get in here, but if we order a pizza, will the pizza guy have to take the labyrinth to reach us? Or?
Right.
And they send it down the hint tube. Oh, look, something came down the tube. Oh, it's not a hint, it's just pizza. You guys order pizza?
Hey, that's our show. Check out our website, nicegames.club, for show notes and links to resources on today's topics. We'd love to hear your thoughts on this episode and our programming in general. You heard us talk about it in the middle of the show. Go to nicegames.club/feedback and tell us what you think. You can get in touch with us on Twitter, @NiceGamesClub, where Dale tweets about game dev resources and hitting a disco ball. Or you can email us, contact@nicegames.club. Want to support the show? If you do, there are so many ways. You can give us a review in your favorite podcast app. You can tell your friends about your friends.
Tell your fiends.
Tell your fiends. Tell your friends about your favorite episodes. Join us on Discord by visiting nicegames.club/discord. And also, we are on Patreon. As a patron of the show, you'll enjoy bonus content, extra jokes, and more. There's some new stuff up there this week.
It's true.
Get on it. Sign up at patreon.com/nicegamesclub. So, until we start again, remember to
play nice
and make nice. The feedborn.
Why did I say feedborn?
You were smashing feedback form.
I was trying
form.
To say it together yeah. at the same time.
Feedback form.
And I said it several feedborn. Times, and I just.
We're gonna call. It, can we call it feedborn from now on? The feedborn. It sounds like a Tolkien creature.
It really does. The feedborn. Yeah, the feedborn. That does sound like. Yeah, it sounds like a real monster creature thing. It's weird.
Like the Ents and the feedborns.
The only way to defeat it is like give it a thorough critique.
Yes.
How can we do better?
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts, so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.